Good morning, Your Honors. Craig Webster on behalf of Bruce Warren Sampson, the defendant. I'd ask to reserve, and may it please the court, I'd ask to reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal. Your Honors, in the early morning hours of October 27, 2019, Mr. Sampson and EU engaged in a physical fight in a hotel room on the Yakima Indian Reservation. Both Mr. Sampson and EU were Yakima Nation enrolled members, and as I stated, occurred on the Indian Reservation. So, therefore, Your Honor, we had two Indians involved in a fight on Indian country. Based on Mr. Sampson's, based on the incidents of the fight, two counts were alleged, and Mr. Sampson was indicted on one count of assault resulting in serious bodily injury and one count of assault with a dangerous weapon. Mr. Sampson fought the indictment, took it to jury trial on a theory of self-defense, and ultimately was convicted of both counts at jury trial. Here before Your Honors, Mr. Sampson challenges that conviction to assault with a dangerous weapon. Under the statute, there are two types of weapons that can be considered a dangerous weapon. One type is a per se dangerous weapon, such as a knife. That's not relevant to Mr. Sampson's case. The other type is a common object, such as a shoe, which is ultimately what Mr. Sampson was charged with assaulting as a dangerous weapon. Under Ninth Circuit precedent, particularly U.S. v. Rocha, U.S. v. Swallow, in order for a shoe or a shod foot to be considered a dangerous weapon, Mr. Sampson had to use that shoe to augment the physical force of the assault with the intent to commit serious bodily injury. In the case of Barr, Your Honor, there simply was not that evidence. No rational juror could find that Mr. Sampson used a shod foot to enhance, to intensify the physical force of his assault. Our argument is fairly factually intensive, so it helps to give some background. In the incident, there were three adult eyewitnesses to the actual fight. All three testified at trial. Mr. Sampson testified on behalf of the defense. Charlene Richards was also present. She's Mr. Sampson's significant other. She testified at trial as well on behalf of the defense. The only other person there was EU, the victim of the crime, or the alleged victim. He testified as well. No witness testified that, no eyewitness to the fight testified that Mr. Sampson ever kicked EU with a shod foot. That testimony was lacking in the record. Ms. Richards testified that the two men engaged in a fight. EU knocked down Mr. Sampson. Mr. Sampson returned. They engaged in a punching match. At one point, EU pulled out a knife, attempted to attack Mr. Sampson, and Mr. Sampson defended himself. Ultimately, he punched him and finished the fight. Mr. Sampson testified at trial.
Yes. Mr. Sampson never, his argument was not a self-defense because he denied that did he ever argue self-defense?
Yes, Your Honor, he did.
Did he? Okay.
So, Your Honor, he argued, he didn't deny the fight.
I think I was getting confused because initially he disclaimed that he was involved in this at all, right? And then, but later on at trial, he argued self-defense?
That is correct, Your Honor. When Mr. Sampson was at the Sunnyside Jail, Special Agent Barefoot of the FBI interviewed him, recorded him without his knowledge, and in that interview, Mr. Sampson did deny any involvement in the fight. But at trial...
Go ahead.
Sorry, Your Honor.
I was going to ask you, though, but this was all heard by a jury, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
So jury sat, listened to all the evidence, listened to the jury instructions, weighed the evidence, and then came back with a verdict.
Correct, Your Honor. Your Honor, I think what's unusual about this case is EU's testimony. And this entails also our a motion for a pretrial deposition, and arguably that Mr. Sampson's right to confrontation was violated. At trial, so a week before trial, EU significantly changed his story in an interview with the government.
Was that pointed out to the jury?
It was, Your Honor, yes.
And the jury heard it?
They did, Your Honor.
And they made a decision?
Your Honor, they did make a decision, but at trial, EU, he basically created an evidentiary black hole. So he testified that he was hit one time by Ms. Richards with the beer can in the head, and the other time by Mr. Sampson in the head, and then he was knocked out. So that effectively shielded himself, Your Honor, from any type of cross-examination. And the government and the jury was required to rely on a series of inconsistent statements made early on, pre-trial by EU. So at trial, EU never actually adopted any of those statements, Your Honor. So he never actually said those statements that he had made were in fact true. And very little evidence actually came out.
Pardon me, I need a sip of water.
There's virtually no evidence that came out at trial that indicated that Mr. Sampson in fact kicked EU.
There was some circumstantial evidence, wasn't there?
There's very little, Your Honor.
Well, there was the injuries.
There were, Your Honor, but Dr. Newton, the government's own expert, testified at trial that those injuries were consistent with a fist, they were consistent with a foot, I believe said they were consistent.
Well, and as you know, it was the jury's role to determine what the facts were, and they can rely on circumstantial evidence.
Your Honor, understood, but it still has to be the evidence has to be reasonable, the credibility of the evidence. There has to be a reasonableness to it. But there also there has to be...
Well, he had a couple of broken ribs, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
Just out of curiosity, was there a Rule 29 motion made in the case?
There was, Your Honor, yes.
It was denied?
It was, Your Honor. Your Honor, and what's troubling about this case is just that there really was a minimal amount of evidence that suggested he actually, in fact, kicked EU, that Mr. Sampson kicked him. But you need to take it a step farther under the case law, and there has to be evidence that the shoe was used to basically intensify the force of the physical assault. And that evidence just was not there. There was not sufficient evidence for a rational juror to make that finding.
Okay. Why don't you move on to the other issues?
Thank you, Judge.
Time is running out.
Your Honor, it ties into the sufficiency of the evidence argument, but pretrial, we made a motion for a pretrial interview of the material witness, EU. That motion was denied. And ultimately, because that motion was denied, and because of EU's basically false memory, which at trial, Dr. Newton testified that a person in EU's situation would not lose their memory, and basically showed that his presentation of being hit twice, being knocked out, and then remembering afterwards, but not 2 years later, it was against science. It medically was inaccurate. It showed those is basically a false presentation. So because...
And the jury heard that?
Yes, Your Honor, yes. I'm paraphrasing.
So the bottom line here, though, is that the defense has no right to interview a government witness prior to trial.
Your Honor, I understand that's the current state of the law. I acknowledge that, but I think that's quite frankly wrong, and I think it leads to.
You think we can do anything about that, or I mean, other than like only en banc court could do something about that, right? Or
I could.
Yeah, we do have Judge Benitez with us.
I appreciate it. Your Honor, I think this situation does allow you to do something, because I think under the circumstances, because of EU's testimony, at trial, Mr. Sampson's right to confront his accuser was violated. That Sixth Amendment right was violated. The purpose of the confrontation clause is one to...
It's a hard argument to make because he did get to. You're just unhappy with the state of his of him when he actually got to got to confront him months later or years later or whatever it was.
Your Honor, I understand what your Honor's point.
That'd be pretty far-reaching, you know, if we were inclined to agree with you, because it wouldn't just be that you have a right to confront, but that you have a right if you think that the person will be different. And what would be the line that a court would draw on that?
Well, Your Honor, I can tell you, I don't see why a defense should not have access to a material witness pretrial. To me, that would certainly be best practice. If that was tried in state court, certainly that right would be expected, and actually to be effective as counsel, you would require overturning precedent for that position.
I thought you were saying, yeah, but this is like a special case, but I'm trying to figure out what the line would be.
Yes.
If this were a 1326 case and the material witnesses were going to be made unavailable, then they would have that right. But that's not the issue here, right? It's not a question about whether or not the witness would be unavailable.
Well, in some ways, he made himself unavailable. I mean, arguably, he made himself unavailable when he testified at trial.
But that's even worse for you, I think. It seems like you're saying that, well, the reason he's unavailable is because he was not being honest later, and that's what, but that could always be the case. So that would mean that, I mean, then you really are asking for a categorical rule change. If your argument was, well, we knew from the medical evidence this guy was going to not remember anything but would remember it in the short term, but your doctor said the opposite of that, said that that doesn't happen. So, if the possibility that people may lie on the stand when they get, when you get them on there is always going to be present, and you can do with what you did, I think, which is say, this person's obviously lying. We've got a doctor saying that he has to be lying.
Your Honor, I agree with what you're saying, but I do think this was different. I think the combination of the two in this case, I think there was a confrontation violation because the way in which EU testified at trial, he effectively removed himself from cross-examination on the substance of the fight. He claimed to have been knocked out after two blows, and so there was no way for the jury to observe his demeanor when he's testifying to those statements. There was no way.
You said that earlier. I understand. I think you wanted to reserve some time so we can have your. I do think we're probably going to ask the government about the obstruction of justice enhancement, so maybe be ready to talk to us about that on rebuttal.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Richard Burson, Assistant United States Attorney out of the Eastern District of Washington, our Yakima branch office. May it please the courts. Taking the court's cue, I'm going to turn first to the obstruction of justice enhancement. The district court applied the obstruction of justice enhancement after finding that the jury must have found that the defendant was not truthful on the stand, and I am paraphrasing a bit here, for his testimony.
Can I interrupt you for just a second?
Yes.
You're familiar with the Herrera case?
Not off the top of my head, Your Honor.
All right, let me. So the Herrera case, the district judge in that case, who, by the way, in my opinion, should be on the Supreme Court, said of the defendant, he said, the defendant does not have a right to either attempt to mislead the court or to commit perjury or to obstruct the proceedings. And I recall his testimony, and I remember when he was testifying, thinking to myself that it was, to put it kindly, tenuous at best. And in that case, the Ninth Circuit, in an opinion written by, I'll call him my friend, Judge Silverman, found that the materiality finding had to be made explicit. Judge Graber, as I recall, dissented in that case. And I've read her dissent, and of course, since I was the district judge in that case, in case she didn't gather that by now, I read, and I can understand how the Ninth Circuit said that in my statement I was not clear enough. But in this case, the judge made the following statement. The judge said, the jury necessarily found that the defendant perjured himself. He used the word perjured. Now, in the Dunnigan case, the Supreme Court defined perjury, said in determining what constitutes perjury, we rely upon the definition that has gained general acceptance and common understanding under federal criminal perjury statute. A witness testifying under oath or affirmation violates the statute if she gives false testimony concerning a material matter with a willful intent to provide false testimony. If a judge uses the term perjury, isn't that basically a shorthand for saying, these are the three things that I find? Do you agree or disagree with that?
I agree with that statement, Your Honor.
Oh, good. All right.
But that's not what we've said in our case law.
That's not what the Ninth Circuit said in
right.
the
Aren't we
case.
Bound by our case law?
Yeah, so...
Yes, Your Honor.
Except for in the Herrera case, the judge did not use the term perjury, but in this case, the judge did use perjury, correct?
That is correct.
Yeah. So they're distinguishable.
It is, and...
So where's the materially false statement here?
Defendant testified, at the very least by negative implication, that he did not kick the defendant. He testified that he punched the defendant only in the torso and head. He testified that when the victim fell, I believe it was several times, that he paused in the fighting and allowed the victim to get up before resuming the fist fight only, according to the defendant during testimony. However, what the jury found that the government had proved beyond a reasonable doubt was that the defendant had assaulted the victim with a shod foot, not just a shoe, but a foot, or put differently, kicked him. That jury finding is irreconcilable with the defendant's statement, 100%, that he did not, or I should say, right. So his testimony, that he did not kick
so
the
victim.
So that
will often be the case because, you know, usually somebody's going to present evidence or say they didn't, you know, especially if they testify, they're going to say they didn't do it, the jury finds they did it, and you could almost always say, well, you perjured yourself or you... So in some ways, it seems like the Herrera Vera case and these other cases from the Ninth Circuit are basically just saying, like, the obstruction of justice enhancement will kind of almost always be an automatic enhancement unless we don't do something to make the court do something extra. And that something extra is that it has to explicitly sort of, if it wants to do that, it just has to go through the work of explicitly making findings. And I don't know if I agree with that, but it seems to me what Herrera says. So I don't know that just pointing to... Are you not familiar with the Herrera-Rivera case?
Not intimately, Your Honor, no.
Okay. Well, I mean, the problem is that sort of... That's the case that I think we're all concerned maybe binds us, so it's hard to have a discussion with you if you don't have it in front of you. Okay. Oftentimes, logically, you will be able to clue this person must have perjured themselves, but it's not clear to me that that's sufficient, that the logical conclusion that they must have perjured themselves, which is what I think you're arguing here.
My argument is, Your Honor, it's the only conclusion. If the jury believed the defendant that he did not
kick...
That's
what I mean by logical. Like, if it's the only... But I'm just not sure that's enough under Herrera. I think you still may have to make the factual findings. And I think what Judge Benitez was asking you is, can we take from the legal conclusion that they... where the judge says they committed perjury, that the judge is sort of using that as a shorthand for the three factual findings that would go into a perjury finding, right? I don't know.
I think that's correct, Your Honor, but if the standard is where the court makes that shorthand, and therefore in 100% of those cases where a defendant, according to the district court, has perjured himself, and that finding by the district court is reasonable beyond a preponderance of the evidence, which was the standard here, then I think that's a reasonable presumption to apply. I think that's a reasonable application of the obstruction
enhancement. I'm not sure if I disagree with you that would be reasonable, but I'm not sure that that's reconcilable with Herrera-Rivera.
I guess the difference here, Your Honor, would be that this isn't just a defendant making a statement that's mildly irreconcilable with testimony, contra testimony. The difference here is that it is directly irreconcilable. And so under any standard...
Well, I won't speak for the district court judge in Herrera-Rivera, but I get the vibe that maybe that judge felt the same way in that case, too, that it was directly irreconcilable, logically irreconcilable, like flatly irreconcilable. And our court said that wasn't good enough.
Well, I think with the language used in Herrera by the district court, Your Honor, was that it was, I believe, tenuous. Yeah. I believe I'm using the correct verbiage. So that is a difference.
I think it was using the classic understatement approach of saying something, I believe is what the district court said.
That falls under the no good deed goes unpunished rubric.
Understatement or not, Your Honor.
It was vague. But it was vague and not clearly stated. Whereas in this case, the judge clearly says that the jury necessarily found, and I think that's an interesting word to throw into that. He said necessarily found that the defendant perjured himself. So you would agree with me that, in fact, that's a shorthand way, as stated in the Dunnigan case by the Supreme Court, of saying that all the elements are met, right?
For perjury, yes, I would agree with that
and
statement.
And perjury is, in fact, obstruction of justice, right, under the guidelines.
Yes, and I want to be clear, I can't get into the district court's mind when they used the term perjury, but assuming that the district court used legal words with the weight that they are intended, then yes.
You think the jury just could have relied on the circumstantial evidence presented by the government's expert?
Are we turning to the verdict in this case, Your Honor?
What you're saying is that the way you're interpreting the judge's statement is that he obviously perjured himself with respect to use of the foot, right? Well, there was other evidence with respect to how he sustained those injuries. There was the circumstantial evidence.
That's correct, Your Honor.
That the jury just could have relied on. They didn't necessarily have to believe that he was lying.
They didn't have to believe he was
lying.
But you're saying
it's so obvious that he lied. Well, he may have lied, but we don't know what the jury relied on. And I think all that this is intended to do, I don't think, you know, I don't want to, Judge Benitez is a current district judge, and I understand they have a heavy calendar and everything, but when we get to sentencing, it's a different kind of thing. I mean, you know, district judge can say, hey, look, you know, he lied, and here's how he lied. It was material to the jury's verdict, and I'm going to apply the obstruction of justice enhancement.
So it says in Herrera-Rivera, believe me, I'm reading from it. The district court must make express findings on each element of perjury. That's what our court said. And here, the district court said the jury necessarily found that the defendant perjured himself. So do you think stating the conclusion counts as making an express finding on each element?
I think the analysis was shorthand and possibly not perfect. Having said that, there are certainly facts in the record that would support the conclusion, whether or not the analysis was spelled out with sufficient or what we would desire in terms of detail.
To support the conclusion does not count as an express finding on each element, right? I mean, I think in other circumstances, we wouldn't say, you know, like we have standards of review that force us to look at the record and see if we can find the evidence supporting it, right? But that doesn't sound like what Herrera, when it says the district court must make an express finding. It'd be another thing if it said must make an express finding of perjury, right? Then I think you'd be in really solid ground. But it may make an express finding on each element of perjury before applying an obstruction of justice enhancement.
I think by implication, the court did make a finding. Whether that's express enough or not is certainly an open question. However, I think considering all the facts in the record, just stepping out of the perjury realm for just a moment, taking the defendant's testimony as a whole, there were several statements made that were frankly incredible. Multiple statements that were, to use the district court in Herrera's verbiage, tenuous to the truth.
But getting to Judge Van Dyke's question, though, even though perhaps you and I might agree that the testimony would support a finding for obstruction of justice. Under Herrera-Rivera, the judge has to make a finding on each of the elements. So it doesn't matter what the evidence, I mean, what you tell us the evidence shows. The question is, did the judge make a finding on the elements? My question to you was geared as to whether or not perjury, in essence, by saying that the defendant perjured himself, did the judge not find that all of the elements set forth in the Dunnigan opinion were met? You see what I'm saying? So you can tell us all about the evidence, but it doesn't tell us what the finding was, unless you agree with me that by saying that the judge found that there was perjury, and perjury includes a finding of all the elements. You follow what I'm saying?
I do, Your Honor. And assuming that district court judges, federal jurists, use words with legal implications, knowing what the implication of those words are and knowing what elements underlie them, then yes, we would assume that the district court judge did make a finding with respect to each element by implication.
But what was the finding that he was making?
It's not clear, Your Honor, from the judge's order.
Then there should be an express finding.
What I mean by that, it's not clear whether he was referring to the fact that the defendant perjured himself by claiming self-defense, or whether he perjured himself by saying he never kicked the victim. Either one of those is true. The self-defense probably more in that tenuous nature.
You're talking about findings. You're talking about, you know, the factual basis, the factual predicate.
That's correct, Your Honor. But I do have to concede the district court judge did not elaborate anymore on exactly which statements were perjury.
Just out of curiosity, so if we were to find that the judge erred by not making the requisite findings, what happens next? Gets remanded back to the trial court?
I think it's... I believe that's correct, Your Honor, be remanded back to the trial court for resentencing without the obstruction enhancement.
He could make the findings. Yeah. He could do it.
And so he would say, so now the trial court judge would say, I find that he materially lied because the evidence supported that he kicked a defendant with a shod foot.
That's correct. We would, because that evidence, I think, is so uncontroverted, that statement is so irreconcilable with a jury verdict. I don't know how a district court could make any other decision, frankly, without it being an abuse of discretion or clear error if we're looking at the facts. And so as a technical piece of this analysis, yes, I think remand. But if this court were to take it a step further, I think it could avoid remand by saying the conclusion will essentially be the same, that the judge could not have come out the other way.
That's what happened in Arias Villanueva, right? The court looked at the whole record and said, having looked at the record.
I think that's right, Your Honor. I'm a little cautious in affirming that off the cuff, but yes.
Well, thank you, counsel, for your argument. Do you have any other further questions for my client? Thank you, counsel. We'll hear from Mr. Weber.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you, Your Honor. Your Honor, to address the obstruction issue, Your Honor, my recollection is that the district court did not make those elemental findings.
I don't think any of us are saying that. The district court did say that the jury had necessarily found he perjured himself. That's what they said. So, and I assume your position would be that by doing that, he necessarily found all the findings that are included in that?
Your Honor, I think he needed to do... I don't think that the court actually did the analysis that's required under the case law that Your Honor just cited. Going back from my recollection of that, I don't think he did. I don't think that much... Respectfully, I don't think a whole lot of time was spent on that individual enhancement and argument, and so I don't think those findings were made. I think it would need to go back. I think it would need to be remanded, Your Honor.
You know, I ask the questions because neither Jimenez or Jimenez-Ortega, which were cases, or Castro, which preceded Herrera, in none of those cases did the district judge use the word perjury. But in this case, the judge said necessarily perjured himself, right?
Your Honor, and I'm not certain what to make of that. I think, honestly, part of the language the judge was using was probably based out of what was in the PSR. I'm trying to get into Judge Mendoza's mind, and I'm not certain, but I think he needs to go beyond just the simple conclusion that there was perjury. I think he is required to make those individual findings, Your Honor, and should do so.
Okay.
It sounds like someone agrees with you.
Your Honors, if I could just briefly, I'm running out of time, but I do think it's important to address the unreasonable sentence and disparate impact. Mr. Sampson, the fact that he was Yakima Indian in Indian country subjects him to federal court jurisdiction under the Major Crimes Act. And, Your Honor, his sentence is...
I think we have this argument from your brief. We're familiar with the argument, so I understand why you'd want to make it, but I think we'll go ahead and leave it at that, unless my colleagues have questions about any of that.
I don't.
Thank you, counsel. Thank you to both sides for your argument this morning. We have one more case this morning.